Hey everybody, and welcome to another issue of Elder Speak Interviews. This time around, I have Seth Gerson with us here on the site from Last Legion Games. Welcome, Seth. Happy to have you here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So for those of you not necessarily in tune, I'm just going to have Seth here introduce Last Legion Games and tell us, what exactly are you and what is the studio?
Sure. So we're an independent technology developer, and we have a new system that will be coming out pretty shortly, and we are a game developer as well. So we've been developing games, including the first cloud-based MMO game, which was Watchmen Justice is Coming, that we did with Warner Brothers, and we've also released Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes and My Name, which are mommy games, as well as Squash the Street, Polyghost, and Pet Cemetery, all iPhone product, and now we have our first wave of Facebook product coming out. And the first one of those is Golden Nugget Vegas Casino, based on the historic brand.
Absolutely fantastic. Got a lot of a catalog to choose from here. So I'm going to go through pretty much every single one of those you named and just ask you a couple questions on those, just basic, so we can get those people interested in each product you have to offer. So first, I'm going to go back to Watchmen Justice is Coming. Now, you said it's the first cloud-based MMO game, and it's on a platform not necessarily known for that capability. So what were these kind of challenges you encountered when attempting to create the first game of this kind on a very non-MMO-savvy platform?
Well, I mean, the first thing, if you kind of look at the hardware and the poly specs, you know, you're pretty much, if you want to do an MMO on that platform, you can't do it just rendering polys. So we had to effectively go in and re-architect the way that we would do that. And the answer was using cloud computing. So that is the basis, and it was a proof case of using cloud computing to make an MMO world. That thing runs on a lot of servers, you know, just from a you know, creating shards or instances, because you would have instances where you had people fighting, and then you would turn around and you had big worlds where you could have tons of people effectively walk around in the same world at the same time, and you couldn't do that from a, you know, from a poly count limit, unless you tried a different type of computing style. And so that's what we really did there. It was the first cloud-based MMO, and you know, obviously the first iPhone cloud-based MMO as well. And we did that with the Watchmen universe from Warner, which is DC Comics Warner Brothers, and it's phenomenal. It gives you a very interesting storyline and a way to play, you know, an MMO, you know, with lots of other players on the iPhone.
Absolutely. Now, Chris has a quick question, I have one follow-up question real quick before Chris. I'm sorry. I always end up cutting off this guy, but real quick follow-up here. You mentioned, of course, we all know Watchmen is a pretty big license now for Warner Brothers, and this is a very risky product just on paper and definitely in execution. So how did you approach Warner Brothers and care of DC with this product, and how did you get the rights to be able to create the game?
So we went in through the filmmaker side and through the Warner Brothers side, and that's effectively, you know, how we started off and the deal that we executed to make that brand. You'll notice that the where we're covering is not sort of in the territory of the comic or the movie. It's sort of a, you know, we're predating that, and we used a particular writer that people over there just absolutely love, and you know, we Peter Arpello, and we got him on there. So
fantastic. Yeah. I was gonna say, looking at the game, it doesn't necessarily speak directly to the comic or the film, so it's nice that you're creating your own extension of the brand there. And why don't you tell us a bit more about the game itself? I mean, what can players expect to do when playing Watchmen Justice is Coming?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's one thing, you know, immediately sort of when you jump in that game, if you were to go along the, you know, the first question is, how do you make a storyline, you know, that's an MMO with, you know, an iconic brand like that? And the thing is that MMOs, you know, the story evolves. So from there, you know, we took sort of a different approach, but effectively you're getting clues as you play that game. And what you're doing is that there's a very big world. There are a lot of different regions that you effectively walk through, and as you walk through those regions, you're picking up clues. And then there's a battle system that we integrated, so you can battle non-player characters, and you can battle player characters as you know on your quest and as you're powering up. And then the fighting system is a very simple sort of triangular-based fighting system, but it makes it's sort of more strategic, and it's kind of it's like a strategic way of playing a rock, paper, scissors, effectively. So.
Fantastic. Now, if I can abruptly change the subject in
Yes.
perhaps the most dramatic way I can, going from the Watchmen license to the Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes license, you grouped it together with another game and you referred to it as something I believe mommy games. Am I correct in that?
Yeah,
So
so we
what are mommy games?
so we have some mommy games there. We have a brand that's called Animal Crackers, and we have two games. One's Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, and the other's My Name. And they're toddler games, you know, for children under the age of 5. I have a 2-year-old daughter, and when the iPhone sort of first came out, I was watching her with some simple, you know, with some simple things that we were testing out, just watching her interact with the device. And Julie Sandor over here, phenomenal producer and mother herself, sort of spearheaded that effort for us. And what we did is we went out and we created two games to kind of test the market for toddlers. Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, which is the song you sing. It's got a couple of different modes, and a very fun animated experience for kids. And then My Name is a little more educational in nature, focused heavily on, you know, on basically spelling and spelling of, you know, sort of 5 names of people close to the of close to the child. But both of them work. And one of the most interesting things I saw was I was over at a friend's house, and we had a 1.5-year-old, we had a 3-year-old, and we had a 5-year-old, and all of them were playing Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes and singing together. So it was interesting that it really can span the sort of that age divide there.
So you've had a pretty good response from the untested market as a whole, you would say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, going again from one spectrum of the game development cycle to another, you have a very big variety in terms of inspirations here. Squash the Streets, for those of you that don't know, has some very obvious political and economic inspirations. Basically, from what, if I may so paraphrase, you have a bunch of bankers and various other financial types that made a lot of bank on the bailouts, and your job is to shake your iPhone and cause them to fly all over the street, hitting various cars and street lamps and everything else. And so, very obvious inspirations, but what exactly motivated you to the extent of creating an entire gameplay experience off of that?
Well, you know, we one thing that I mean, not just our company, but I think video games as a whole. What's interesting is when you kind of look at ideas, you know, ideas sort of run in they're very cyclical. I remember in I think it was like '96, you had a bunch of sort of spider games that came out, and now if you turn on your TV, I mean, you're going to be if you kind of hit that 9 p.m. time slot, you know, you're pretty much guaranteed to find either a vampire or a zombie or a werewolf product, you know, that someone's broadcasting at you. And this was we and we all sort of have the same stimuli, as you know, we're reading newspapers and other things, and you know, sort of one of a very salient thing that was coming out and that people were talking about was sort of you know, the bailout and the Madoff scandal and things like that. So what we did is we decided to take a very tongue-in-cheek approach, and our approach was effectively you know, when you sort of close one eye and you pinch and you're like squashing someone's head, and we got the same gameplay, but you could just poke your finger down and squash all the little bankers as they're running out to their G5s and their you know, and their limousines. And you one of the guys who's invested in the company is an investment banker, so you know, we had a sort of a wink at him as we were making it. It was quite fun to make. And you know what's interesting is it really really took to people. Sound effects in that thing are hilarious as well.
They'd have to be. Do you think there's a potential for more games in this kind of Schadenfreude-esque line of development reasoning? Do you think maybe we'd get a slide Obama down his polling number slide game or something like that, where you expand into the kind of real-world influence design?
You know, I'd really love to see more product come out that is really more sort of pop culture-esque. What we see now, even with the social games that we see on Facebook, product takes a long time to make. So, you know, by the time a trend sort of hits and people are latching on, by the time you can make something that's really interesting, that the trend's kind of died. And that's one of the really nice things I think about the iPhone and sort of, you know, mobile in general, is that it's a great platform to kind of make that social commentary and bring things to a level that wasn't seen before. And I think, you know, video games for our generation are something that books and movies really were, or you know, and TV, I guess, to some extent for our parents and grandparents' generation.
Indeed. With the mobile platform and independent developing platforms like Xbox Live Arcade, you're seeing a lot of these politically motivated, very current idea games being released more and more in the past couple of years, and that's a great thing personally to see, and I'm pretty sure everyone appreciates it from that standpoint. So it's nice to see a developer focus in on that and actually deliver a really strong product in that regard, not just, you know, an 80 Microsoft point side-scrolling platform with Barack Obama in it.
Thank you.
Well, you mentioned Facebook, and that's a really good point to move on to now. It's been declared by various sources here and now, of course, all hearsay. It's the year of the brands on Facebook. Of course, the social platform has always has its brands mostly from Zynga, but it's always been room for expanding. And one thing you're trying to add into the fold of Facebook is the Golden Nugget game, based of course on the casino license. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and why Facebook is a platform for it?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So I mean, the first thing is you know, when back when our team, I mean, you know, we've done all sorts of different I mean, we've been making video games for years, and pretty much, you know, the first thing you do when you go to make a video game, I mean, for, you know, for us production people, is, you know, someone in marketing, they're going to tell you sort of what your audience looks like, and especially on console. You know, the first thing you're looking at is what's your installed base and how many units can you sell into the installed base, and what's their software to hardware ratio. And then from there, you can go out and you can start to have product budgeted and make games and make great product. And with Facebook, there are 500 million people. I mean, half a billion people are on this thing. And that's powerful. And then when you sort of look at that, what I love is how that breaks out. I mean, the first thing is half of these people play games. That is phenomenal. And then after that, they don't just play one game. They play four games at any given time. So they're playing four games over the month. And you know, it's really interesting. We've gone out and we all buy TiVos, and the TiVos are to free up our time. But with the Facebook games, we look at games that basically engage us and tax us on a time basis. You know, any of the social games, you know, take your pick. They basically call you back on, you know, either a 15-minute or a 5-minute or a 8 hour, you know, 24 hour, whatever, 48 hour cycle, and it brings you back into the game. So the mechanics of that and the sheer numbers are a fantastic way that, you know, you can sort of reach people.
Absolutely. I mean, just the mathematical possibilities alone are outrank pretty much any console, if not all of them put together.
Oh,
So, yeah.
absolutely.
So moving away from specific products now, I just want to use your kind of platform and experience as a developer to just throw some general questions about the industry your way, get your kind of your feel on what's going on generally right now. So basically, starting on your iPhone development experience, where do you see the mobile market going in 5 years? You have naysayers saying it'll never match anything but mobile sales. You have the enablers that think it's going to be the biggest market in the universe in next month. So where do you see it going at this point?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. When over here, I think we have a different perspective on games, and on mobile in particular. We're not really looking at where is mobile going versus where is the platform going. We see everybody going in one direction, and so in my opinion, mobile, and your Facebook game. And at some point your console, they should all be one experience. And so you should be able to experience them differently on different platforms. But really, I see we heard the term convergence a long time ago, but I think you're gonna see actual convergence happen now, where I can play things on, whether it be my Android phone and on MySpace or Facebook at the same time. And really, the technology's there. So there's no reason that people shouldn't be doing that. So I think the question then becomes, where is my user base and who is that user? And the other thing that I think is really really powerful is that when you start to look at those users, you can you we now, because of the way that people game and because of the way that we're creating games for them. And the analysis we're putting in, we can really give consumers an experience that they want in a much more timely manner. So I think having the analytics and the behavioral gameplay data is really going to allow us over the next 24, 36 months to make a whole new wave of much, much, much stronger and more compelling products.
I couldn't have asked for a better answer. That's something we need to put up in quotes somewhere, I'm sure. But
Oh, thank you.
you've already spoken a little bit about the development process, but here in the mobile games, just taking a look from my outside development perspective, as it were, you seem to be the nerd amongst nerds. It doesn't, in terms of interest from other developers on other platforms, in terms of interest in basic gamers when they say mobile games or mobile developers, they have a much, I wouldn't say inferior, but definitely they have a different idea of what you are. And speaking from the perspective of a mobile developer, and at least in part, how's been your experience just interacting with other people and other developers across the gaming board? Because you guys haven't always been iPhone developers, if individually, if not as a company.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, no one in this. I think there are two people, actually. There are two people in this company that have less than 6 years of video game experience, and all four team leads have a minimum of 20. So they're experienced. Yes, I mean, definitely. I am the nerd among nerds, but it's different. If you kind of look at games, and I mean, we first of all, we play games with a religious zeal around here, and there are all sorts of different types of games to play. So when you look at games, the first thing you have to do is look at who your audience is and the engagement, sort of the engagement paradigm or behavioral gameplay pattern of that individual. So if we're playing, for instance, if we're playing something or if we're creating a game that's for a console, we're looking for something that is a deep that's a deep experience. So we're talking about total engagement, and we're talking about something that that's effectively a potentially a career choice for an individual as they're playing it. And then you start to move towards the more casual end, and you have something like Wii, which is more social. And what's interesting is once you start to get really in the den, and sports games fit this category, and then when you get a little more casual, it's Wii. You start to think about sort of how people would take and play board games. So they're in the same room, they're communicating, they're laughing at each other, joking around. And then you start to move towards phone games and casual games. So what's interesting is phone games, we've learned a tremendous amount, mobile games. And one thing that I think we're going to see, and certainly we really push the envelope with Watchmen, and we want to see a long term, we want to see a lot more of this, is really getting a more engaging experience. Now, the trick with mobile games and what makes it very difficult is it is very, very, very difficult to get an extremely engaging experience and keep it into a, you know, a less than 5 minute chunk. People on mobile, you know, there are a lot of things that happen. They get another call, they get a text message, they're waiting in line, you know, or they're on the subway. So there are a whole lot of mitigating factors that basically say that you got to keep this experience short. And that is really, really tough from a design perspective. And then once you get onto the sort of, you know, social game area, now we're talking about 5 minute chunks, people checking in multiple times during the day. So that's different. Yeah, that's the complete opposite from the console end. It's how do I keep that really engaging and entertaining, but keep it, you know, even it's something that I can do, check in, you know, effectively on a mobile scale and do it really, you know, right now we're doing it from a PC, but very soon we should, there's zero reason we should not be able to do that from any device.
You brought up that I guess you have to do things in small chunks. Do you ever see as mobile games increase in popularity? They already have a lot, but as they go even further, do you actually see any games that actually aren't so chunkish having a success?
You know, it's tough. So there are a lot of things out there that make that difficult. You know, one thing that's interesting is that if I'm on a phone, no matter what that phone is, and the call drops, I understand it, right? I say, "Oops, dropped a call." But when you're playing a game, the actual user, when you watch them, they can't understand that the call that basically the connection to the server dropped. That's sort of a right now that's kind of a social or cultural thing that we have to be able to get over. And that is a key ingredient to making more engaging multiplayer experiences. So that's the very first thing. The second thing is a lot of it has to do with the screen real estate you're dealing with. So on the you know, when I'm dealing with an iPad or, you know, some sort of you know, one of the Android devices coming out, any of those devices, I've got a lot more screen real estate to deal with than I do on the phone. And then, you know, you start to have to think about sort of what are your level of detail issues, you know, and how far do you want to go? So, you know, those are kind of things that we look at.
If I may return to Watchmen yet again, as I seem to be doing, you've actually you're one of the few developers that can come out and say that you really attacked the not the problem, but definitely the confusion of cloud computing, even if it's just on a mobile platform. The only other that we can really speak of at this time that's really making it waves in the industry is OnLive. So I was wondering, as a person, as a developer, as a studio with experience in that, how do you see On Live at this point, and what do they need to really get that mass market that that they desire? Can they do it on console as you have done on mobile?
Yeah, so I think the on live, you know, I think that's I think it's interesting. In terms of, you know, what they're doing, effectively they're sending out a they're basically sending one, you know, a frame at a time and trying to I mean, you got to get it over, you know, 15 frames a second. You get it over 15 frames a second, and then, you know, effectively you trick the brain. So I mean, you know, in terms of their business model, I think you'd have to go ask Steve. But that said, there are a lot of companies that are effectively using the same methodology. There was Vali, which came out years ago. There's Gakai, which is Dave Perry's company, and, you know, a bunch of other ones that are, you know, sort of coming out. So I think that methodology's sound, but you know, it really, I think for that battle to either be won or lost, you have to ask, you know, what does the consumer at the end of the day want? You know, do I want to play Warcraft from my phone? Now, Watchmen, we harness the power of cloud computing in a way, you know, when the engineers did that allows you to play an MMO, but that was right for the device. We've got, you know, technology which I can hint to that we're going to show you guys pretty soon, that uses it in a whole different light. And then, you know, it comes to, you know, sort of what's your model? Because at the end of the day, with any platform, it's the software that drives it. You know, whether you're going back and you're looking at the, you know, 16-bit Nintendo versus you know, your Genesis machines, or you know, the whatever it is, it really depends on the device, you know, the device. So whether it was the 8-bit, the 16-bit, you know, 32-bit, whatever, and those devices, the thing that made them all successful was they had really good software. Now, some of the devices, you know, I used to work for Sega, and I remember when Saturn came out, and I was at Sega at the time, and we had a really great machine, but the parallel processing on the thing made it very difficult for developers to kind of jump on and make really pretty flashy software. And PlayStation came in there, and Sony did a phenomenal job, and they had great demos, and it was easy for developers to jump on. And you kind of see the iterations of that right now. We see Xbox 360 and we see PS3, and both of them, you know, the one thing that they both have, and we also see with the Wii, is they all have really good software that speaks to their audience. So the thing for OnLive is, you know, the software comes in two packages. Typically you get your third party software, which is you get, you know, other people to create for it, and then you get your first party software. So that is, I think that's the battle that they have to go fight. And then the second thing for the consumer is, you know, does the consumer physically want, you know, that box in their house? Because what are the things that box and that offering is? And I mean, I think the 360 offering right now and the offering on my TiVo, which is not a game system, they're really phenomenal offerings. I mean, combined with Netflix, I mean, even my iPad, I take my iPad out, I'm running at the gym, I put Netflix on there, I'm streaming movies and I'm running. It's a great experience. And so, you know, and then when you look at Kinect and the user interface on that, it's a whole different level. So I think that, you know, a piece of that is really we're moving away from one game at a time, and we're moving into a world where there's sort of a ubiquitously online world, and I can approach it from multiple devices. But at the end of the day, it's not just where do I play my games, but where do I get the best total product offering.
And that was one of the big problems I see is that you got all the other companies, you know, the Microsoft, the Sony, all them. They all have the games you can't get anywhere else. And if you just have all the, you know, typical Activision, EA games that you can get anywhere else, it's kind of hard to say, yeah, choose us over them.
Yeah, and you know, the bottom line right now is you know, I mean, the compression's good on that thing, but you need a fast modem. So you know, you need some sort of very fast internet connection.
I'm actually curious. Are you guys going to make a splash at next year's E3?
So E3 for us is E3 traditionally it's really a you know, more on the console side of things. So it's really a conference about you know, console, and you know, and I think, look, I mean, for the guys, you know, next door to us and others, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? You're getting in there, you're in the summer, it's time for the buyers to start, you know, putting down their orders for Christmas. For us, we use E3 really as sort of a different methodology. We use it as a means to go meet. It basically saves us about one trip to Europe and one trip to Asia every year. I mean, when I go on trips, I like to try. I try to meet about you know, eight different companies a day, and you know, wherever we go. So for us, that's a huge time savings. So for me, it's less about products to show and more about, you know, the sort of looking at a future slate. Also for us, you know, with a lot of what we have coming out, our shows are a little bigger, you know, are sort of more of the on the developer side, and then on the actual games we have coming out, we release our games in beta, and we don't really sort of do advanced showings. When we release them, we're very quiet about it, and you know, we kind of watch as the traffic starts to pile up.
All right, so like more of a GDC is what you're referring to.
Exactly,
and you use
more,
E3
more
for connections. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. That's how we do it.
As all smart people do, E3 is networking central for pretty much everyone in the industry.
Yep.
Okay, well, if we can't expect to see you unless we're, you know, business partners at E3, what can we expect out of Last Legion in the coming months, in the coming year? What can you give us hint-wise of what we're going to be seeing from you guys in the future?
Sure. So we have a phenomenal partner, one of the top 10 Facebook guys. We're doing a product in conjunction with them. And it is smoking hot. I mean, I've seen what the designers are working on. It's absolutely unreal. We've got a new platform that we're going to be announcing in the next couple of months, and it's going to change the way we think about gaming. And so we've been working on a lot of this stuff sort of in stealth mode, and it's some exciting stuff that's going to be coming out, and we're going to be announcing some additional just absolutely huge brands that we're going to be working with that are our partners, and getting a whole new generation of games out and kind of changing the way that we play social games.
Sounds fantastic. We're probably going to need to bring you back in a couple months then to tell us exactly what you've just released to us.
You got a deal.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's all the time we have for right now. My guest again was Seth Gerson of Last Legion Games. Thank you very much for being with us, Seth.
Thank you for your time.
And this was, once again, another fantastic episode of Elder Speak Interviews. Keep it tuned to elder-geek.com for more great info on interview, feature, review, and news form, and any other possible way you can think of. All right, see you later, guys.